Jenkins for the championship. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Fires to the end zone. Touchdown! Alabama wins!
We're back after a one-week break for, I guess, convenience or something. I don't know. Stone Cold Sports Talk, episode 23. I'm Luke Stone, joined for the new, as always, by Jay Banzette, William Smith, and Taft Gant. We have massive, massive, massive games in the college football world this weekend. Had a couple upsets last weekend. Well, one big one. The number 15 team in the country, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, lost again to a, I don't want to say.
This is not necessary. Let me go ahead and throw this out here.
I don't want to say one of the bottom teams in the ACC, because I don't know if we're beating, if UVA is beating Carolina, then it seems we can hang with anyone. We did cover against Clemson. Just want to continue to throw that out there. But of course, big news this week. There was something very significant, and obviously there are still some things very undecided about how this is going to work. But the big news on Tuesday was that at 4 p.m., the NFL had its trading deadline. And there were a couple moves right before the deadline, including one last week. So we're going to go through all of these and briefly give our trade grades. So the first one we're going to go through is the Seahawks getting Carlos Dunlap in exchange for from the Cincinnati Bengals in exchange for getting rid of offensive lineman B.J. Finney in a 2021 seventh rounder. Jay, your grade on this trade.
This is an A because they're trying to win now. And Carlos Dunlap still has a little bit left in the tank, and they didn't really give up anything for him. So, if they're building for the future, then probably not a great move, but they are obviously trying to win now, and their defense is a problem. So, I'll give it probably an A-minus, actually, instead of an A. I'll give it an A-minus.
William, thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to go B-plus here. Solid depth pickup for the Seahawks. The Bengals, the Seahawks gave up. Didn't give up much for him, but I think it was good on their part. And like Jay said, he's still got some left. He's one of the elite pass rushers. I feel like he's still kind of underrated. So the Seahawks have a pretty porous secondary, and their defense is kind of in shambles right now. So if they can get some pressure on that front four, that's just what they're going to need with Dunlap here.
Taft?
Yeah, I think this trade works out for both teams well. Carlos Dunlap is going to be in Seattle now on a team that's trying to win a Super Bowl this year, and he's going to fill a position that Seattle has struggled with a little bit this year. And then the Bengals are scoring an O-lineman that we've seen all season is much needed for to protect Joe Burrow, who seems to be scrambling around every Sunday just trying to find a possible way to win games when he's being blitzed by four D-linemen every snap. So I like the trade for both teams. I'm going to give it an A-.
I agree with Jay and Taft here, A-. Williams, a harsher grader than the rest of us, I suppose. Next trade, Ravens getting Yannick Ngakoue for a third rounder in 2021 and in 2022, a conditional fifth rounder. Of course, adding Ngakoue gets the Ravens a very fearsome pass rush with two former Jacksonville Jaguars, Calais Campbell and Ngakoue. Jay, your thoughts on this trade?
This is an A+. It's not really close. Saxonville has moved up north with Campbell and Ngakoue. The way you look at it, you trade a third rounder. What defensive end in the third round are you going to find that makes an immediate impact like Yannick Ngakoue will? The Ravens are obviously trying to win now, so they can give up a little bit of their future. And if they end up getting a Super Bowl, it'll probably be because Lamar Jackson blossoms a lot, but this will certainly be another reason why, especially if they go through the Chiefs and he gets a sack or two, or at least – if he doesn't get a sack number, like people criticize Jadeveon Clowney a lot for not having production. It's because he's drawing those double teams Aaron Donald gets double teams but still gets production. Clowney draws double teams, doesn't get as much production, but it frees up one-on-one matchups on the other side of the offensive line. That's the same thing that'll happen with Ngakoue if he starts making an impact. But the way it is right now, you can't really double him because if you do that, you leave Calais Campbell one-on-one. So they've got to figure out ways to protect both against Ngakoue and Campbell. And so obviously this is pretty much an A+ out of the park to me.
And of course you've got Matthew Judon on that defense as well. He's a good pass rusher. I agree. A+ for the Ravens. William, what about you?
Yeah, since I'm the harsh grader now, I'll go with an A. I do really like this trade. They did not give up much to get Ngakoue. Now it seems like their defense is pretty much as well-rounded as you can get. They have Marcus Peters and Marlon Humphrey, so there aren't many weaknesses, and obviously that pass rush is going to be pretty formidable having Calais Campbell and Yannick Ngakoue back together. But it was just interesting how Ngakoue felt like he was tossed around over the past few years, going from wanted out of Jacksonville, then had a very, very short stint in Minnesota. So I think he's found his home in Baltimore.
There is a somewhat of a revolving door in Minnesota with pass rushers. We'll get to that in just a second. Taft, your thoughts on the trade?
I'm going to agree with the room and give it an A as well.
Now, the Pittsburgh Steelers traded for Jets linebacker Avery Williamson for a 2022 fifth rounder and a 2022 seventh rounder. Avery Williamson seen on social media in one of the best moves of the week, standing somewhere in Manhattan in his full uniform and pads and his helmet, putting his thumb up on the side of the road to try to hitchhike the heck out of New York City because of the Jets. From overnight, overnight goes from being on an 0-7 team, or an 0-8 or 0-7. Are we at 8 now?
They were 0-7 at the time.
So goes from being on an 0-7 team to the only undefeated team remaining in the NFL. Avery Williamson to the Steelers for a bag of potato chips. What's the room thinking? Taft, lead us off this time.
Yeah, I think it's a fair trade for Steelers. I mean, undefeated team in the NFL. They're looking for talent right now. I mean, it's the same story as past two picks with Seattle and Baltimore. But for what they're looking for, they're not giving up another pick until 2022. So I think it's a good pick for Pittsburgh for a team that's trying to win right now. So I'll give it a A-.
Julius, you put your hand up for a second there.
This just I cannot stand the Jets. He's literally your best player on defense right now. Well, second best. Okay, Quinnen Williams, all right, is number one in my mind. Williamson was by far your best linebacker. And you give him up for a fifth rounder and a seventh rounder, not this year, but next year. And
A-plus for the Steelers.
I mean, it's good. Devin Bush tore his ACL. They needed a replacement. He's probably one of the better options you can get on the trade market right now. But the Jets let go of Steve McClendon 2 weeks ago. Okay, he's your best run-stopping defensive lineman. Okay, and now you get rid of your best run-stopping linebacker, and you've got problems. And I just don't know. It's an A for the Steelers. I'll give it. I'm thinking B-, maybe C-plus territory here on the Jets side. I just don't think this was very – this was just not what the Jets needed to do.
Hey, they're trying to tank really hard, and, you know, there's some fear that they might actually be getting a little better, so they just got to sell off.
Stone, they're not trying to tank. They're trying to win, but they just cannot win, period. They're not trying to tank. They just suck so bad that they don't have to try.
William, thoughts on the Williamson trade?
Sheesh. You covered most of it. I'd say it's not so much an A-plus for the Steelers as it is for Avery Williamson. And the guy just went from an 0-8-0-7 team to an 8-0 team, a Super Bowl contender. A little bit of a Kevin Durant move, but he was traded. He's kind of a tackling machine, and now Pittsburgh's linebacker room is pretty scary if you think about it. They have Devin Bush. They also have Bud Dupree, and they have T.J. Watt prowling the outside. So now they have a good, solid guy they can rotate in who – proved himself in New York. So I just don't know why they gave up so little for him.
All right, Quan Alexander.
Because it's the Jets, and their ineptitude has infected the city of New York. So I don't.
Quan Alexander.
I just don't understand.
New Orleans Saints for a conditional fifth rounder and repeat murder suspect Kiko Alonso. Jay, thoughts on noted murderer and decapitator of Joe Flacco, Kiko Alonso, being
that was so bad. I think this is a decent trade for. I'm not sure. I think Kiko Alonso still has some in him, so I'm gonna give this an A- for both sides. I think this is pretty good. The Saints obviously are trying to win now because Drew Brees won't be here next year. So they're trying to bring in some capital that'll help them. Quan Alexander, certainly a really good linebacker. And I mean, Kiko he's okay. He's not super fantastic, but you know, I mean, the Saints, I think they certainly got an upgrade, and I mean, they gave up a decent amount, but not too much. I'll give this an A- on both sides.
William.
I'm going to be plus.
Taft?
Back to my harsh ways. You know, he's not even guaranteed winning that weak side linebacker spot. Still got the GOAT, Alex Anzalone, there. So presumably he'll win the job. He's still got to go through that unstoppable force. And he'll probably be paired with Demario Davis, so that'll be a solid linebacking core if Alexander's healthy. He's definitely had some health issues in the past. Last year, I think he played only 8 games. And I feel like it's a win for the Saints. You just want to get Kiko Alonso off your team. Just feel like he's a toxic presence. And yes, I was watching the decapitation of Joe Flacco, and I think Alonso like ran to the other side. And one of those games, he like went to the other side.
That was the same game. He was the same game.
Yeah.
The other side.
That did enough for me.
Matt Blunden.
That's what I think of Kiko Alonso.
At the University of Virginia, quarterback Matt Blunden got his bell rung so hard, went to the other sideline, and then realized he was in the wrong spot.
How many years ago was that decapitation?
2017. The Flacco one? 2017.
Yes, Flacco one.
Taff, thoughts on Kiko Alonso getting dealt for Quan Alexander?
I agree with Jay. Slight upgrade for the Saints, and they only really had to give up a fifth rounder and a toxic player in Alonso, so A-.
All right, Everson Griffin going the Ngakoue route, which is getting traded in the offseason and then getting traded again at the deadline. I have a feeling that Cowboys fan, that resident Cowboys fan Jay Banzette wants to weigh in on the complete and utter lack of production from Everson Griffin for the first six, seven games this year.
See, you know what confuses me? We were going to play the Washington football team 2 weeks ago. Preseason or pregame captains. You know who they were, Stone?
Who?
Everson Griffin, CeeDee Lamb, and Noah Brown.
Oops.
So the week you name this guy a team captain, you trade him. And in a year where the Cowboys lack any sort of positive leadership from anybody on the coaching staff or the active roster.
Jerry's in lose now mode.
You trade this guy. You cut Dontari Poe.
He was fat.
I mean,
so you're giving this guy,
Detroit got him for a steal. Like,
short answer, you're giving this guy, short answer, you're giving it a C for the Cowboys.
C-.
Okay.
I'm just dumbfounded.
I agree. I am too. Detroit gets an A+. Cowboys C-. William.
It'll be A- for the Lions. Threw a bag of chips at the Cowboys and got a pretty solid pass rusher. Obviously, I think he's past his prime, and he's definitely a loose cannon.
Bag of Lay's chips.
Yeah, I don't know what the Cowboys are doing down there. I guess they have Aldon Smith, who's now the best pass rusher in the NFL. His reinstatement. Definitely just an interesting move by the Cowboys, and I think the Lions get a solid piece if Griffin is focused on the field. And off the field, if he can get his act together, then I think he'll be a solid pickup.
It's COVID and he's going to Detroit. I don't think there are that many distractions. Taft?
I could see this trade. I could see Griffin thriving in Detroit, or at least doing better than he did in Dallas. So for Detroit, I'm going to give them a B+ just because of the potential.
All right, it is now time for bets of the week. We've got a pretty loaded slate this weekend. I was told that we wanted to talk about the Pac-12 being back because apparently that's important. Longtime listeners will know that I have some major beef with the existence of the Pac-12, basically. So here's what I will say about it. The Pac-12 is playing football again this weekend, period. Now, on to the bets of the week. Jay, lead us off.
So this is going to set – this is a very what's the right word? This a biased pick, but also a very reasonable pick. Carolina goes to Durham, the toxic city of Durham, to face a laughable Duke Blue Devils football team on Saturday at noon. Carolina is only an 11-point favorite. Let me remind you, Carolina played NC State, another in-state rival, 2 weeks ago. Won by, I believe it was 23 points. Duke is far and away worse than NC State. So 11 points to me is ridiculous. I'm taking Carolina minus 11 over Duke. And so money line, I think Arizona State's going to win outright against USC. They're given plus 310. I'm taking that over Clay Helton, who may not make it to this point next year as the coach of USC. That's a take for another day. And then I think this is just downright disrespectful. West Virginia and Texas are given an over under of 55. I'm taking the over every single day of the week with Sam Ellinger.
William.
Yeah, I'm going with Jay on this one on the spread. Having Arizona State cover versus USC, 10.5 dogs. I like this spot. I like this spot for Jaden Daniels. See what he can do in his sophomore season. It's going to be the battle of the sophomore quarterbacks, Caden Slovis versus Jaden Daniels. And I think that Herm Edwards is going to right the ship for these guys, get them on a good start. Because USC, I just don't know if they're consistent anymore. Even though they have some weapons in that offense, and I don't know if Clay Helton's coaching will get them over the top. So I like Arizona State here to cover. And then my money line, I mean, come on. Where else do you go here? Pitt versus FSU. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's not looking too optimistic for Pitt. Kenny Pickett is out, and their best safety, one of the best safeties in the ACC, Paris Ford, opted out this season. But you always got to have faith. Always have to have faith in that run defense. I mean, they held Javion Hawkins to 75 yards after he had 75 yards in his first carry for a touchdown. So that just tells you about that explosive defense they have. And I don't know, not liking this too much, but I'm going to go Pitt. And then over under BYU versus Boise State, I'm going to go the under here at 61. There's going to be rain in the forecast. That's simply all that's going into my decision-making process there.
No, I kind of love that more than I love my own picks. Taft, want to go ahead? You ready?
Yeah, I'll go for it. So for my spread, I have South Carolina covering against Texas A&M. I know A&M has proven themselves this season as the number 7 team in the country, but it's a night game in COLA, which I've learned from my friend here that that's what they call Columbia down there. And
that is a fact.
I think the Gamecocks will be riled up for this, their first and only night game of the season in COLA. And I don't know if they're going to necessarily win, but I think that they can keep it within 10 and they will cover. For my money line pick, I'm going to go with the Fighting Irish over Clemson. I think that if there was ever a time for Clemson to lose an ACC game, it's now. Notre Dame is plus 190, and Clemson struggled with their backup quarterback against Boston College at home last week. So I think Notre Dame could win that game. Keywords could. And then my over-under pick, I agree with William. Texas and the West Virginia over 55. I mean, come on, the Longhorns are averaging 44 points per game and allowing 32.5. I'm taking the over whenever it's 55 with Texas.
All right, so my spread pick for this week, Indiana plus 3.5 over Michigan. Haven't loved what I've seen from the Wolverines this year. Indiana obviously beat Penn State in week one. They have shown that they're a good football team. I think they're ranked 13 this week. Not sure what we're going to see, not sure where we're going to go. But I think Indiana getting 3.5. Was Jay trying to chime in there? I saw you.
I was just going to say Indiana getting 3.5 is just disrespectful. Michigan, I can't say it over there, but did something in the bed last week, and it was just not pretty football. So Michigan State turned the ball over 7 times against Rutgers in week one and then beats Michigan in the Big House. It just doesn't make any sense.
Don Brown is the MVP for like every coach in the Big Ten when they play Michigan. Not loving Michigan, and Indiana getting 3.5 points seems way too easy. My money line pick, and I am going to award this. I have just drawn this up on my notepad. The hammer, 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 hammer pick of the week. It's a hammer that says hammer 3 times. And then obviously it's a hammer. So it's the hammer, 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 hammer. Kind of like Paul Bunyan's axe or whatever other sort of wacky college football name trophies we want. Arkansas is betting at about even money over Tennessee right now. Tennessee is trending down at this moment in time, kind of like the inverse of what their season looked like last year, where they were awful at the beginning. Very good in the second half of the season, owned the longest active win streak in college football for a stretch once LSU lost to Mississippi State in their opener. So I think Tennessee not doing great. Sam Pittman at Arkansas, one of the stories of the year. harnessing the full elite power of quarterback Felipe Franks to go on just this tear of covering the spread. And I don't think they'll just cover their 1.5 spread this week. I think they beat Tennessee outright. And Felipe cements his status as a solid sixth rounder, maybe for the Dallas Cowboys. And then my over-under pick.
Absolutely not. No. That takes it too far.
My over-under pick is the Boston College Syracuse game under 52.5. Syracuse, as noted, is 1-6 now, including a loss to Liberty University. I think all of Hugh Freeze's scandals might be forgotten at the end of this year, and there'll be some desperate SEC team that will hire him, possibly Auburn. And then Boston College, as we all know, despite having the new coach, they're still not exactly a high scoring team. Good defense though. I think Syracuse gets around 17, and then you're looking at Boston College, 28, 31, somewhere in that range. So I think Boston College, Syracuse under 52.5. But the hammer pick of the week, Arkansas, even money over the Tennessee Volunteers. Two games of the week this week. We've alluded to to one already, that's Clemson Notre Dame, but let's start at the world's largest cocktail party. I imagine it won't be as large as it usually is, although it's Florida, so a man can dream. The Georgia Bulldogs, number 5, I guess playing host, I don't know who's technically home, but against Florida in Jacksonville. Taft, I know this is your baby. I will give you the lead off here.
Yes, my baby is playing in the SEC East Championship game this weekend. You might as well give it that title, because unless anything crazy happens in the first or in the second half of this season, the winner of this game is going to the SEC Championship to face most likely Alabama. And something that stands out this year is the injuries. Georgia is out. Georgia has lost both of their starting safeties, most notably Richard LeCount, who's the captain of that defense. And then both starting tackles, Jordan Davis, who has just been incredible this year. So 6 guys who play a lot in the Dogs defense are out this weekend, and that scares me considering they're going up against a very strong Florida offense led by Kyle Trask, who has 2 very dangerous weapons, and Kadarius Toney, who I was reading an article and they think that he is the best receiver in the SEC over Waddle. And I agree with that. Toney is a very hard guy. He's one of the hardest guys to cover in college football. And Kyle Pitts.
Wait.
You can argue with that.
Devontae Smith had 4 touchdowns last week. Enough said.
Kadarius Toney, very hard to stop. Kyle Pitts, a tight end with wide receiver talent, 7 touchdowns this season. So the Dogs are going to have to find an answer for those 2 guys. The secondary is going to have to step up. My keys for the Dogs to win this game, I think that obviously shut down Kyle Trask, come out strong defensively and prevent getting down early, because Georgia's defense was very, very slow against Kentucky last week, only putting up 14 points against a Wildcats defense that is good but not great. And then most importantly, they need to take care of the ball, and that starts with Stetson Bennett, who has thrown 5 interceptions in the past 2 games. And Florida's defense isn't great, so Georgia's going to have to keep up because Florida's offense is going to put up a lot of points. I think the Dogs will do those things. They're going to run the damn ball, led by Zamir White, and I say Dogs win 31-27. It's going to be a shootout, though.
Let's go around the horn. William, your Florida Georgia pick.
I got the Gators. All the losses on defense are just too much for me. We saw what Bama did to that defense too. And granted, this is Bama, the best offense in the nation. Probably they have like the 3 best receiving weapons in the country. But do not sleep on this Florida offense. Obviously you talked about Toney, who is a lot like Waddle, but he can also run the ball out of the backfield, which is very scary. And then Kyle Pitts, who's obviously going to stretch the field. He'd probably draw a lot of Richard LeCount, which is a big problem because the linebackers can't guard Pitts. So I like that matchup for Florida. I don't know if they're going to have any answers to guarding Toney. And then on the offensive side of the ball, I don't know. There's not much that really excites you about Stetson. And Zamir White's a fine running back. He'll get some yards on the ground. He can't really catch out of the backfield. But George Pickens is – I think, questionable to play, which could be a huge – he'll play?
He'll play. He's not 100%, but he'll be there.
All right.
Oh, we didn't punch someone the game before this one?
Yeah, the Georgia Tech game last year.
Massive. Because, you know, when you're going into the SEC championship against LSU, you really want to be shorthanded. Jay, your thoughts on this game?
William said it pretty clearly. Georgia's without over half of their defensive starters. That's enough for me. I wish I could say something about the mailman doesn't deliver on Sundays, but, you know, Saturday plays in college football. I don't think Stetson Bennett finishes the game. I think he'll be healthy. I think he'll get pulled. We'll talk about that later in facts or fake news. I just got the Gators. They're going to figure out their defense at some point, and Stetson Bennett is a kind of nice option to figure out against. So I got Georgia. I got Florida. That was a little much. I got Florida. Give me 28-24.
Taft loves being doubted right now, I think. I think he sees the opportunity to give us, like, to say, like, oh, okay, fine. Well, let's put some money on it. I'll give you all 2-1 odds. Or give me 2-1 odds.
I'm not betting on the dogs, but I like the pressure of not
being, being the favorite for the first time in this rivalry.
I think this is going to be a very good game. And Georgia's won the last 3 years, and Dan Mullen's never won this game. But I think this year is going to be – it could go either way. So I'm very excited for it.
I don't want to be the person who ties what happens in presidential elections to football games, even though there were some indicators earlier this fall. However, in 2016, that was the last time that Florida beat Georgia. We don't really know who's won the election, so I have no idea where I'm going with that. However, here's what I'm going to roll with now. Kyle Pitts is really good. Kyle Trask is really good. Dan Mullen's really good. If Todd Grantham gives up more than 30 points this week, he's fired. He should be fired, like, on the spot. Literally leave him in Jacksonville. If that happens, if Stetson Bennett can put up 30 points, then I'm done with Todd Grantham forever. He can go to the Cincinnati Bengals like he should have gone last season, and he should just get his behind out of Gainesville.
Say it with the chest, Luke Stone.
I had coffee this morning. I still think Florida wins this game. This feels kind of like how it's felt for Florida the last couple of years, but just kind of flipped where Georgia's the team that's like, you know, they're a frisky pick. They're good. They're not going to go down lightly, but, like, you just wonder if the offensive weapons can keep up despite how bad Florida's defense is. I mean, the offense for Florida is just, they're not in the same class, at least right now. And they have, Georgia could obviously prove me wrong this weekend, but I think Florida, not necessarily easily, but I think Florida could win this game by 8 or more. I don't know. I think if Georgia's offense starts sputtering, I would not be stunned if Florida wins this game, like, 31-20 or something like that. That's not the pick I'm going to go with. I'm going to say Florida 33, Georgia 26. Lots of field goals. Lots of weird field goals.
Taft is loving it right now.
I love a confident Stone Gator fan. It's my favorite.
Why? Because you're just going to text me on Saturday at like 7:30 and be like, thoughts? And Jay is just going to pick up the phone and say, Luke is currently asleep on my couch right now, cursing Todd Grantham and crying.
Luke and Liam are asleep on the couch together, just like the old days.
All right. Now we've let's just go quick hitter predictions. Clemson versus Notre Dame. literally just score in one sentence. Taft, go ahead and start us off.
Well, you heard it with my bet of the week, but I think Notre Dame is going to win. I think it's going to be very close, and if they do, it's going to have to be high scoring. So I have Notre Dame 28, Clemson 24.
William.
I like Clemson in this game. We actually saw a pretty good showing from DJ. I don't even want to try to pronounce his name because there's no way I get it right.
I think it's Weon Delele.
Okay, whatever that was.
It's weird. There's no N in the name, but there's like a N in how you say it. It doesn't make much sense.
Like Tua Tagovailoa. That's how you're supposed to pronounce it. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I think that they're going to rely on ETN a lot. They're going to rely on Amari Rodgers a lot and take a little pressure off the freshman quarterback by giving ETN some more carries. I like where their defense is trending. I think Brian Brzee is turning into one of the best pass rushers in the ACC. And I just don't know if Notre Dame can perform in these, you know, big – is this a primetime game? I think this is a primetime game.
7:30 on NBC.
At least watching –
I don't know.
I was going to say, at least watching Notre Dame lose will help me swallow the pill of when Florida loses to Georgia again. That'll make me feel nice and good.
Yeah, ever since Notre Dame lost 30-3 in the playoff against Clemson, I don't know. I doubt their ability to come in these clutch games, but still, this is the perfect opportunity for them. I just think that Clemson's the better team.
Ever since Notre Dame hit me with the rejection letter, I've been out on their football team, not going to lie. Jay, your thoughts on Clemson-Notre Dame?
Stone, I know you know this about me. I cannot stand Notre Dame. Cannot stand the thought of Notre Dame. Can't stand the tradition, the gold helmets, any of that nonsense. Think about the last time Notre Dame got on a big stage and won.
Lou Holtz.
It was okay. Week 1, 2018, they beat a brand new Shea Patterson to Michigan by 7 at home. That was the last time.
I don't know. Maybe it was smoked. Charlie Weiss got the 10-year extension, 6 games through his first year.
Good Lord. They got smoked by Michigan last year. All right. That was 44-16 in Ann Arbor. They lost to Clemson 30-3 in the Cotton Bowl the year before. Notre Dame, this is a game that Notre Dame should win. I just don't see it happening. I'm going to take Clemson probably by 10. So give me Clemson 34-24.
In the words of Owen Wilson, wow. I'm going to go Clemson 23, Notre Dame 20. Ian Book doesn't show up in big games. There are going to be a lot of red zone field goals here. All right, now it is time for the Blast from the Past Sports Thing of the Week, brought to you by the Poolland Weed Eater Independence Bowl 1990-1997. We've got a member of the Fighting Irish and an esteemed member of the Carolina Panthers Ring of Dishonor. Julius, tell us about quarterback Jimmy Clausen.
This guy, Jimmy Clausen, played quarterback for Notre Dame from 2007 to 2010. In high school, he had a 42-0 career record that's only matched by Kyler Murray that I know of in high school. Sports Illustrated in 2006 labeled him the kid with the golden arm, and some media compared him to Joe Namath. All right, let's go from there. Jimmy Clausen's, I think his career stats in college, he completed 68% of his passes in his junior year before he left. So his career completion percentage was 62.6%. He threw for 8,148 yards in 3 years and 60 touchdowns. The main reason I wanted to bring this guy up, he's kind of the epitome of Notre Dame. You think he's going to be something that he's not. Labeled the guy, the boy with the golden arm in high school. Never completes more. Okay, that I mean, it's decent. His sophomore year, which, you know, like you should be doing pretty well your sophomore year, he threw 17 interceptions. He had negative rushing yards every year he was in college by a wide margin. Negative 187, negative 73, and negative 95. So it's a blast from the past. Well, he did not do that great at Notre Dame. People still thought he'd be a top 10 quarterback taken.
They still thought he'd be a top 10 quarterback taken off the board. And then immediately after, he went to the NFL, played for the Carolina Panthers. I have a feeling William remembers how that little experiment went. I think that was right after Jake Delhomme, maybe.
He was the transition from Delhomme to a guy named Cam Newton that we took 2 years after Jimmy Clausen.
You mean the guy who was going to get a 5-year contract extension about a month ago, and now New England's trying to get drop him like a hot rock? Like
yeah, that guy.
Thank you for providing this week's Blast from the Past Sports Thing of the Week, brought to you by the Poolland Weed Eater Independence Bowl. Facts or fake news? Number one, popping right into it. Steelers will go 14-2 or better. Their two most difficult games the rest of the season are probably the Bills and the Ravens. Of course, they won't have the Ravens at home, though, and I think they have a trip to Buffalo, but they play in the Northeast, so it's not that big of a factor. Taft, will the Pittsburgh Steelers go 14-2 or better?
I say fact. I think they will. They've already gotten through the toughest half of their season, and, I mean, the Bills and Baltimore have not been that impressive, so I think they'll get by one, if not two, of those games and finish with at least 14 wins.
William.
I'm going to go fact here as well. I don't know how they keep winning. That offense just seems Like, it's not potent enough to win these games, but I mean, I guess they have some good weapons. They need to keep Deontay Johnson healthy for once. Every time I start the guy in fantasy football, he gets injured. But I really like the looks of that defense. Obviously, they just got Avery Williamson. They have Minka, and that linebacking core is something special. And Cam Hayward is still, he's so old, but still so productive. So, yeah, I think that they'll get 14-2 or better. I mean, crazy to say. It's just been an insane year for the Steelers.
Mr. Benzette?
I'm going to go fact here. I don't see them. That, honestly, they should go 16-0, but I'll give them 15-1. They'll screw up somewhere.
I say fact. I think even if they lose one of those games to the Ravens or the Bills, they won't lose the. Like, I think 14-2 is probably a reasonable estimate. Just because even if they drop some random game to Cleveland or like who knows, Joe Burrow has some out of body experience. No, I don't think they will. I'm just saying that every
Cleveland.
I'm saying every NFL team has that weird game where they wildly underperform.
Yeah, not Cleveland.
That's true. Hey, Baker Mayfield knows the Cincinnati Bengals, though, and no one else in the NFL. I'm going to say fact here. Now, staying in the AFC North, the Baltimore Ravens will not win a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. Jay, start us off this time.
I'm going to say that's facts just because Patrick Mahomes exists.
William?
Facts. I have the hunch that he's not a playoff quarterback, and we saw what he did last year, so I don't like the looks of it. Fact.
I say fake news. I think Lamar Jackson will bring a Super Bowl to Baltimore. He's 24-5 as a starter there, and I think that the Lombardi Trophy is bound to be in Baltimore somewhere in the next 5 to 10 years. Although, with Lamar Jackson's play style, his time is running up, so they're going to have to do it soon if they do it.
I agree. I think it's a fact. I think the Patrick Mahomes thing is a good argument there. Facts or fake news number three, the Dolphins, it's a long statement. The Dolphins have the Texans' first and second round picks this year. If Houston ends up with the first pick and the Dolphins get it because of the trade they made for Tunsil last year, the Dolphins will not take Trevor Lawrence. Do we think that the Miami Dolphins, if they have the number one pick, are in the market for Trevor Lawrence? William Smith, fact or fake news?
I'm going to give fake news, but this literally all hinges on how Tua does the rest of the season. So it's super early to call. I think that they have invested too much in Tua. They recognize his potential. They think he has a high ceiling. We talked about this. He resembles Drew Brees with the accuracy. I don't think they're going to give up on the Tua experiment. I don't think there's a huge gap between these guys. Obviously, Lawrence is one of the best quarterback prospects we've seen in probably 10 years, but Tua is not that far behind him. And I think that once you get him adjusted to the system, he's going to be ready to go. I think this first game was just getting those nerves out.
Tafkan?
I think the Dolphins will not take Trevor Lawrence because if they do have that pick at number one, I think they'll trade it away for more talent maybe later in the draft or in the years to come just because they don't need a quarterback. They need to trust in Tua. So I say that is a fact.
I think it's also a fact. I think, again, contingent on how the Tua experiment goes. I tended to be a little bit of a Tua optimist. I find that most people, as a result of the one game he played, which I told William yesterday is, quote, the weirdest football game I have ever seen the Miami Dolphins play. I was also at the game where Tim Tebow was down 15 points with 2 minutes, 15 seconds left and won the game. Still not even the weirdest Dolphins game I've ever watched. The title of weirdest goes to the one where Jared Goff had five turnovers against the Miami Dolphins, most all of them leading to touchdowns as Tua won his first NFL start with a massive asterisk. I'm going to say fact, the Dolphins are going to trade the pick if Trevor Lawrence is still on the table. Fact or fake news number four, the Dallas Cowboys will have the number one pick.
Fake news. J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets.
Ryan?
Fake news. Who are the Jets going to beat? Who in the world are they going to beat?
Yeah, you make a good point.
I need to look at their – I feel like I don't even have to look at their schedule.
They're definitely at least 10-point dogs against every team they play, except unless they play like Cincinnati, then they're probably like 8-point dogs.
Is like Bryce Hall their second-best defensive player now? I don't even know.
Maybe. It's a tragic,
I don't think he's
tragic position to be in. And then the final facts or fake news, JT Daniels will take over for Georgia by the end of this week's game. Taft, I know this one hits a little close to home for you. You think we're seeing the end of the Postman era?
I was driving to the gym yesterday morning, and we stopped at the stoplight. JT Daniels walks across the street in front of us. And I looked over to my friend, and I said, he does not look like the starter. He just looked – I obviously can't judge it on this one experience, but I don't know. He just looked a little tired. It was 9:15 in the morning. Almost looked like he was running late. He was alone, which means he doesn't have friends to walk to practice with. But I've heard from someone with an inside connection that JT Daniels does not have support from the locker room and that they don't really like him. So I think that Stetson's their guy, and they're going to stick with it. And this is coming from someone who's been vouching JT or Dwan to take over for Stetson for the past 3 weeks. But in every interview that you hear Kirby or Todd Monken speak in, it sounds like Stetson's their guy and they're going to stick with him. So I don't think he'll come in this week. I don't think he'll come in for the rest of the season unless Stetson really, really gives a reason bigger than just throwing 5 interceptions in 2 games.
It's a pretty high bar. William.
Yeah, Taft pretty much changed my whole opinion there after hearing about the locker room controversy. I guess you could say, or you could see that Daniels has a little bit of a Cali pretty boy vibe, which probably wouldn't mesh in the cutthroat SEC. Do you find it at USC in the Pac-12? Don't worry about that. But I know that all the Georgia players love Stetson. Granted, his production has been a little spotty. So I think that this will not be the week that they resort to Daniels. I think if it's really, really, if they're in dire straits, I think Stetson's going to have a fine game this week against a terrible Florida defense. I think that they're going to rock with Stetson.
I think they'll end up sticking with Stetson just because I don't think Florida's defense is good enough to have to sway the room here. He feels very happy with this right now. My thought is just that Florida's defense is not good enough to force someone to play bad enough in a rivalry game like that to bench him. Like, they would have to be up. For me to feel comfortable with Florida winning the game, they need to be up 21 points with 5 minutes left. Anything more than that, in the back of my mind, I'm just thinking, well, I mean, if they just put together a couple 2-play drives, the offense stalls because we try to get way too conservative and just keep running the football despite having Kyle Trask and Kyle Pitts. Anything's possible. That is all for episode 23 of Stone Cold Sports Talk. Big games this weekend, Florida 3:30 against Georgia, and then Notre Dame at 7:30 for their inevitable collapse against Clemson. Taft, William, Jay, thank you all for your time today. And to our listeners, we will see you all next week. Enjoy this weekend's slate.